My name's Lisa Kivrist. Back home in Wisconsin, I run In Serendipity Farm and Bed and Breakfast and do a lot of work with women farmers, helping support them and start new farm-based ventures and do a lot of writing on these sustainability issues, rural living, food. I have a cookbook, a green business book, and we back home run the farm on renewable energy, on wind and sun, so pretty diversified.
And now I'm standing in Grass Valley, California, interviewing you at the Passion into Action Conference. How is it that you ended up here this weekend?
Yeah, well, as women always do, we connect people. And I had a friend, Liz Johnson, with the White House Project at the time, who came last year. And she and I cross-pollinate a lot on ways to increase rural women's leadership, and particularly women working in food system work. And Liz said, you've got to come, and introduced me to Elisa Parker, the co-founder of CJ & Do, and here we are.
Fantastic. Tell me about your bed and breakfast. That sounds amazing.
Sure. When we left the Chicago urban scene now, 17 years ago, to start our farming journey with, I must confess, not any farming experience whatsoever. The one thing we knew we wanted to do was start a bed and breakfast. We had traveled primarily in Europe and loved that environment of being able to share people's homes, share our home, and creating community literally around the kitchen table. So also, too, when we moved to the farm, we left those things called jobs behind, so we needed some income generation and have been doing it ever since. So we're small. We have two rooms in our farmhouse. That's a 100-year-old farmhouse, and specialized particularly in the local foods. We say we have a 10-foot garden-to-plate breakfast from our organic produce fields to the plate, and do a lot with area local foods, too. We're from Wisconsin, so of course there's good cheese on the plate, and do a vegetarian breakfast, varying our menus, a lot of from our cookbook Farmstead Chef, based on what's in season.
And tell me a little bit about your book projects that you talked about.
Sure. Our last book project, Farmstead Chef, is our cookbook that came out last year. And that really brings together both my husband, John Ivankoe's passion about food and how food can really change us. It has our lives. Once we started growing it, raising it, cooking it, eating it, we became much more connected, you know, both to the earth, to other people, to each other, to ourselves and our own passions. So that's what drove the Farmstead Chef cookbook. So it includes both the practical of our favorite recipes, simple ways to get people cooking in the kitchen, to bigger picture food system issues. There's things called kitchen table talks, interviews with our farmer friends and food activists on what they're up to and how they got there. Our book prior to that was Ecopreneuring, which is a blueprint, a startup guide for people interested in creating businesses around what they're passionate about, and particularly from the sustainability standpoint. How can we change the world and create a livelihood around that? And our first book, Rural Renaissance, is on our move from the urban scene to rural living, and is really a sustainability primer, if you will. It covers a lot of topics from organic gardening to renewable energy, kind of the book we needed and couldn't find when we moved, of how can we get started in these things and share our experiences? Because when we moved to the farm and started on this sustainability journey now 16 years ago, there really wasn't a lot out there. There's much more, in a wonderful way, support and resources for people. So we have always from the start felt compelled to share our story, and however it connects, help others on their path.
And one of the speakers this weekend, Martha Beck, who's also an author, talked a lot about when women are finding their passion and their purpose, it's really important to find a comfortable space and find a need and a niche that needs to be met and do that. What a better way than food? What is it? Because you admitted you moved out of the urban area and into the rural area without a lot of knowledge about what you were. You had an interest in food, but not a lot of knowledge of how to go forward and how to get started. So what is it that led you in this direction and keeps you going?
That's a great question. When John and I made that decision to move to the farm, it's not like it was honestly some lightning bolt decision, or, you know, were abducted from aliens and made this life change sort of thing. It did happen incrementally, but the bottom important line was the situation we were in our case, a very unsustainable lifestyle, be it long hours at work, be it an urban scene that was grating on us, to eating most of our food out of styrofoam containers because we weren't home to cook. All those things added up to something we knew long-term wasn't right or healthy or our destiny or passion, you know? And so that's what compelled these changes. And a lot of those changes we realized started connecting us to food. I mean, some of it were just pure practicality. We didn't have these jobs, or before we left the jobs, we wanted to save money, right? So we stopped eating out. We started cooking at home. We embraced the value of dried beans and the frugality aspect of it, and found we really enjoyed that. And that was really empowering on a number of levels, and found that if the less we needed to live on, the more freedom there was in there, the more we could start doing what we really wanted to do. And food has always been a core component of that, because obviously we're always eating. But it also became a core component in our livelihood of wanting to share that message with people. So yeah, it's been an ongoing journey. The one thing, too, about food is the more you play with it, the better you get at it. You know, we didn't germinate zucchini the first time we planted it, but it was only 99 cents in seeds. And the next year, of course, as Mother Nature has her jokes, we were incredibly bountiful in the zucchinis. And you don't need to go to culinary school to learn how to cook supper. You just need to practice and try it and have an interest in it. So I think it's just a very good entry point for people looking at making change, and who knows where it may lead. But to your question, which is a great one about opportunity, we just are in an epicenter right now of food. People are embracing their food sources much more, wanting to know where their food is grown. The whole local food movement, et cetera, is just blooming. So particularly for women with an interest in food, there's so much opportunity, both from, yes, the farming growing side, but creating food products, using local foods, to restaurants, to education, and getting more food in the schools. There's such a wide net of opportunity there, and to both create businesses, but really lead change in how we eat and our health. It's tremendous, and I find it so exciting.
And you talked about something that I think is very common for people before you made your shift 17 years ago. You talked about living a life that didn't feel sustainable. You were maybe pounding the pavement, working very long hours, and realizing it wasn't maybe healthy for you. So what advice would you have to people who are kind of in that space, but are looking to be more healthy, looking to cut back on the amount of styrofoam takeout meals that they are having with their family? What would be some maybe baby steps or tips that you might offer for them?
Sure. And the good news is just the sustainability movement is so much wider now. Do you know, there's ways to connect with local resources, local groups, and things that we didn't see, particularly in urban areas. There's just a much stronger green movement now in most urban areas. So there's a lot of good things happening. But to your question, change can happen small. And I've always find it fascinating how people attack it. And I think sometimes if you attack it too big, too fast, it gets overwhelming. Incremental changes are the biggest step. Even in our own experience, when we move to the farm, people come now and they see the wind turbine, they see the solar panels. It all looks so complete and big. But honestly, the first things we did were changing the bulbs to compact fluorescence, the energy efficiency, which anybody can do. And in all honesty, in the last 16 years, we haven't changed one of them. I mean, they're that efficient. Sorry. John's a tall guy, so he hit one with his head. But that's another story. So we did that. We started line drying our laundry. We started taking all these basic daily measures that we continue today. So integrating them into part of your lifestyle, I think, is key, because then they become natural. Then using a dryer, using a styrofoam takeout container just seems so odd that it doesn't happen anymore. So that's a key component there. But I feel strongly too that sustainability is fun. It's a passion, yes, of mine personally, but when I talk to people, when people come to the bed and breakfast, and we get a lot of folks who are honestly curious, you know, or sometimes we get people, for example, like couples, and maybe the woman's more into all this and she's taken her partner along to see for the ride or whatever it may be, is people sometimes always expect to see more extreme, do you know, or sort of this life of deprivation or homesteading as it might have been in generations past, of really wanting to check out from the world and rough it a bit more than frankly I'm willing to do. So it doesn't have to be. It's a real joyous journey in that sense. We have a lot of community. We have a ton of potlucks. We're always sharing the abundance from the garden. We are always learning, and our bed and breakfast guests help tremendously in this. I joke, but when our guests leave, we have pages of notes from them, you know, on ways to attack those squash bugs in the garden or a new way to look at renewable energy. So there's that cross-pollination there, too, which is really inspiring. So it's never done. I don't feel it would ever be done in a good way. But small steps get people started on that journey. And as was in our case, I think a lot of folks get hooked and keep going. And who knows where it may lead. There's a reason we called our farm and bed and breakfast in Serendipity, because I think we need to very much be open to the people, the opportunities, the newness that happens along the way once we get started.
And I have about three more questions for you, so are you okay on time?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I also interviewed Bill McKibben, the founder of the 360.org
movement. Oh, fantastic, yeah.
And when I talked to him and I said, what can people do in their everyday lives, he kind of said, well, forget it. It's going to be up to the big corporations are the ones that are going to have to do something. If they don't make any changes, then what's the point of everybody else? You know, like all the little things that we do won't matter. What would be your take on that?
Oh, Bill. No. I mean, the work he's doing is tremendous. And he, importantly, is looking at things from the 1,000 feet up, 10,000 feet up level. And I do agree, change needs to happen on multiple playing fields. But I really don't want to diminish the aspects of the everyday. And I think, to Bill's credit, because when you work at that 10,000 level so often or on your daily basis, it can be draining. Do you know what I mean? I admire so much the work he does because he's fighting the big guns on a daily basis. And it's a whole lot harder to have a victory against Monsanto than changing your compact fluorescence in your individual house, you know? But that said, those individual changes are what we each can control and are important and need to be championed. I mean, hands down, there's a long way to go, but there's also an increasing group of people helping us all along to get there. So we live at a great time for change, an important time for change.
So small things matter, and small things obviously add up, right, to a bigger...
Oh, you bet, yeah, and... I realize it's hard sometimes because when you look at the big picture, things are so overwhelming. Climate change is rolling so fast. How is line drying my laundry today going to help? But it will, and it can, and it should, and it must. And two, I think there's a real satisfaction in that, in knowing that most of the groceries for your dinner came from the local farmer's market. There's a inherent satisfaction in there that I know keeps me going.
Right, because the alternative would be to do nothing, and that's not going to feel great.
It would be too depressing, yes.
Fantastic. And are you familiar with Proposition 37? I'm guessing that you are.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
I'd love to hear your take.
Yeah. Oh, wait. All eyes are on California. It's huge. And, well, obviously, I can't vote on that, not being a California resident, but it's incredibly important. And you know,
so for the listeners who aren't familiar, Proposition 37 is a proposition which states that it would be mandatory to list whether or not food products were genetically modified. Some people are going out making very strong statements against this. Why do you think it would be important for Proposition 37 to pass? I'm assuming that is your perspective.
You bet, yeah. Two primary reasons. Obviously, just the importance of the point, you know, I mean, that people here in California would be able to know where their food is coming from and know the sources. I mean, the basic heart of it. However, on a second level, and much more important, is that proposition is providing leadership for the entire country. It's really providing, I don't want to mean this broad, but I mean direction for our agricultural system. If this passes, which, oh, I do hope it does, it'll change things tremendously on the playing field of corporate agriculture, and the corporate ag players of the world will realize that they're losing their power and the people are taking that power back. And it will inspire, I hope, states like Wisconsin, states throughout the country to learn from the experience in California and model our own campaigns.
And so for people who say it doesn't matter if the food is genetically modified, it doesn't make any difference, it doesn't alter the safety factor, what would you say to them?
Oh, please. It's interesting. I have to try to be sensitive to that because, hey, I would love to live with my head in the sand, too. Do you know? It's a happy place there, ignorance and bliss. It is. But it's not our reality. And it's unfortunate that, a big chunk of our society, our nation, live in that world in the sense of, it doesn't affect me, or it doesn't matter, or I'm going to ignore it and it's going to go away. Because the reality is, we live at a time where, no, these problems aren't going to go away. And we need to embrace them. But I'd argue once you embrace them, once you open yourself to the possibility, there's a real empowerment in that. And there's a real confidence that grows in understanding our situations and making the right choices. I mean, sure, I try not to eat GMOs, and I can make my choices accordingly so that I don't, but I'm very motivated to maneuver the supermarket aisles when I do that. And I have learned and educated myself along the way on what those choices are. But if there's a situation that will make it easier for folks, why not? You know, if you still want to choose to not read the label or make your choices as you did before, by all means. And what we Americans don't realize is we're like the only country left that doesn't do that. Do you know, we need to learn from our friends in Europe and other countries on how they value food and relearn how we used to value food. And this is a important first step that's way overdue.
The last question is about you. So you might call yourself a food activist. And you're an activist. You're just a woman who's very, well, active, to be frank. What would be, and you've made some really big life changes along the way. You've shifted your entire lifestyle, for example, and really like dove right into the food industry and learned how to do it from the roots up, literally. So what would be the most important lesson that you've learned on your personal journey? Just that little question.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, in a short nugget, to just get started and let serendipity take a bit of its course. When we first moved to the farm, by no means had an image of where we are today. The renewable energy is a good example. I mean, yeah, we're completely powered by the wind and the sun, but that wasn't even in our realm. Even honestly, the whole sustainability side wasn't, we didn't know as much about it. It wasn't this motivating force, nor honestly, did we have this master plan of this 10-year business plan, and everything was incremental and this is how it was going to go. We had a couple ideas, but much more so we had a real strong passion to give it a try. You know, no decisions in life are permanent. You know, honestly, for a while we rationalized, well, if we try this, we can always go back. We can always go back to where we were, but we wouldn't know what's in front unless we try that. So sometimes, particularly in today's world where there's so much information, you can research your brain to death, that first step, I think, is increasingly harder and harder, but important. So taking that and, again, letting serendipity have a bit of its course too. You won't know the people you meet along the way or the opportunities that might erupt until you get at least in the first step. For example, we were at the farm a couple years, and a white van pulls up the driveway, and this very nondescript, average-looking senior couple walks out and starts talking to us and noticed we had solar thermal panels on the roof. And here we were thinking we're the only ones with renewable energy. And turns out this couple, who now we affectionately call Uncle Phil and Aunt Judy, no blood relation, lived down the road, ran a renewable energy business during the 70s, back in during the Carter administration, were retired, had time on their hands, equipment literally sitting in their garage, and were kind of waiting for us to teach new people and a new generation that wanted to learn this. But we didn't know that when we moved there, and many of our projects now on the farm would have never happened without their mentorship and guidance. But we didn't know until we started. So don't feel like you've got to get all the little duckies in a row. Just one duck. Follow that one duck, and more ducks will follow.
Any final messages or words you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Oh, gee. You know, maybe you got a sense in our conversation, I tend to be that glass half full person. And it's something we need to remind ourselves of today and turn off those glass half empty messages, because there's way too many of them today, be it the media, be it a lot of people that just are down. And it's sad and unfortunate, but I think we need to particularly keep those positive messages going between us, especially as a tip for people trying to make the change, is you want to be around that good energy, be it conferences like here, be it kindred spirited friends that you keep in touch with and the ones that are going to support and not challenge every decision you make. Because sure, there's going to be wrong ones. We've had our fair share, but in hindsight, they've been small, you know, and we've weathered through them, but we need to keep going on that.
And I think it would be a missed opportunity if I didn't let listeners know how they could find out about your bed and breakfast that you've talked about, any website that you might have.
Yeah, our main website is the farm name, In Serendipity, I-N-N, serendipity.com, and you'll see both information on the farm and our books and all kinds of good stuff there. Recipes.
And repeat your name for me.
Lisa Kivrist.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We got a lot in 20 minutes.
All right. You're